almost 40 years later, we still do not have the definitive answer to one of the great mysteries in American history. Who killed Jimmy Hoffa? Investigators have interviewed mob figures, pored over documents, indulged in endless speculation as to the identity and motivations of the person who put the hit on the powerful Teamsters Union leader. And now a History Detectives episode delves into past and present theories of Hoffa's murder. The program includes commentary from Las Vegas historian Michael Green, who is with us today. Michael, welcome to the program. It's really good to have you here.
Thank you. Great to be here.
All right. Before we get into the circumstances behind Hoffa's death, tell us a bit about his importance to Las Vegas. What were Hoffa's contributions to the city?
Well, when Hoffa was trying to build the Teamsters into the powerful union it became, he made alliances with various mobsters, especially Midwestern families, particularly Chicago. Well, the Teamsters Central States Pension Fund was under the control of someone with some connections, Alan Dorfman. And under Hoffa and Dorfman, the Teamsters Union became a bank for Las Vegas. They lent a lot of money out here, and it was very important because at the time, most reputable financial institutions would not lend money for casino building. The first to do it systematically out here was the Bank of Las Vegas under Parry Thomas and Jerry Mack. The Teamsters actually made their first loan for a golf course and then later for Sunrise Hospital, but they went on to lend money for the building of places like Caesar's Palace and Circus Circus, and ultimately for a lot of activity at the Stardust Hotel and some other hotels, casinos. So they're important to the development of the Strip and Las Vegas generally.
So why did the Strip need to borrow pension fund money?
Well, part of the problem was that if you wanted to build a major hotel, how much money did you have to put up? You know, if you're talking about today, think of Steve Wynn when he wanted to build the Wynn, and he'd originally said he wouldn't go back on the stock exchange after the whole takeover with Krikorian. Well, how do you build a $2.7 billion hotel unless you have $2.7 billion, which very few people would have had at the time? In the case of the Teamsters, they're lending money to people who want to build hotel casinos who have some money, there's no question. But why would you put all of your money into it if you can get a loan? Well, the Teamsters would make the loan, and it was a good investment for the people who were trying to build hotel casinos, and it turned out a good investment for the Teamsters.
Hmm. And Jimmy Hoffa had some pretty strong ties with the mob here. Talk about the mutual benefiting, yeah. How the two different parties fare
yes,
in this relationship.
Scratching your back and scratching mine and all that good
scratching stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, the mob in the first place helped Hoffa consolidate power in the Teamsters. So they're vital to Hoffa's development as a major labor figure and to the development of the Teamsters Union. Then you get into how Hoffa and the pension fund made it possible to get some of these places built. And in turn, the success of Las Vegas helped Hoffa's success. There was a story a few years ago, I just loved it. It was in the New York Times about Teamsters, and it was about 5-10 years ago, talking about how their pensions weren't as good as their father's pensions. And it turned out, well, yeah, the pension fund isn't investing with the mob in Las Vegas casinos anymore. So they were doing better in those days. So if you have a group of happy Teamsters, then you can imagine that Hoffa's power is solidified. So he's helping Las Vegas, but Las Vegas is helping him, and so are the mob families.
And so are the mob families. Now joining us is Dan Mulday. He's a reporter and the author of The Hoffa Wars, Teamsters, Rebels, Politicians, and the Mob. Dan Mulday, welcome to KNPR.
Thank you, Dave. Good morning, gentlemen.
Very good. Yeah. Now, you're featured in the History Detectives show on Jimmy Hoffa. You've been covering the union leader since before his murder. Tell us the story of how Hoffa first got involved with the mob. Was it just an occupational hazard for any leader of the Teamsters Union, or was there more to it?
Well, you have to remember that Jimmy Hoffa grew up and made his bones in Detroit, where you also had one of the greatest labor leaders in American history, Walter Reuther, who created the great United Auto Workers Union. Hoffa had a problem in that there was a group of CIO raiders who were raiding the Teamsters turf in Detroit, and they were a lot tougher than the Teamsters. And so Hoffa had to go and make a pact with the local mafia guys. There's a lot of details I'm omitting here, but it was that pact with the mob, which which brought Hoffa from potentially being a great union leader to really nothing more than a labor racketeer. So it was something that started back in the 40s.
Hmm. Some commentators here in Las Vegas have speculated over time that the reason Hoffa was killed was specifically because of his ties with the mob here in Las Vegas. Did the mob here have a special interest in seeing Hoffa murdered?
Well, Hoffa was out of power for a long time. He had given the reins to Frank Fitzsimmons, his hand-picked successor, with whom he had a falling out fairly soon after he went to jail in March of 1967. And Hoffa, when he received his commutation from President Nixon in December of 1971, you know, he was pretty much out of power, and he had basically become one of the big critics of the union. And I believe that Hoffa, if you look at some of the final things that he said, whether it was Jerry Stanicky's fine interview with him, that final interview with him that appeared in Playboy magazine and the issue the month before Hoffa disappeared, Hoffa was talking, and he was pointing his finger, and he was accusing. And I believe that Hoffa was murdered because he was talking. He was informing. He was appearing before grand juries. He was cooperating with Senate select committees, such as the Church Committee, which was investigating the CIA mafia plots to kill Castro, which Hoffa was tangentially involved in. Mm-hmm. He was involved with a guy named Russell Bufalino, a guy named Sal Grinello, a guy named James Flamery, a guy named John LaRocca, and Gabriel Mannarino. And in the end, it was Russell Bufalino who put the contract out on Hoffa. It was Russell Bufalino who gave the orders to Tony Provenzano to engineer the murder of Jimmy Hoffa. And Tony Provenzano, as you know, is one of the people that Hoffa was supposed to meet on the day he disappeared.
Hmm. Yeah, now the History Detectives Special is investigating this mystery, who killed Jimmy Hoffa. So Dan Muldea, tell us what we know about the day he was killed.
I'm sorry, is Charlie Brandt here on the panel?
Yes, actually, Charlie Brandt is here, too.
Charlie has some excellent information about this as well. In my view, it was a three-act drama with different characters in each act. Act one, Hoffa appears at the Red Fox restaurant to meet Tony Provenzano and Tony Giacalone. Neither man shows up. Instead, Hoffa is picked up by one, possibly two cars. The government has believed all these years that possibly Chucky O'Brien, Hoffa's quote-unquote foster son, possibly his illegitimate son, was driving the car. I think that needs to be reconsidered. I think it's possible that Vito Giacalone, Tony Giacalone's brother, was possibly driving that car. I believe that, as Charlie Brandt pointed out in his book, that Frank Sheeran was in the car. I think that Hoffa would not have gotten in the car solely with Chucky O'Brien, I don't think, because they had a long-standing falling out. He certainly wouldn't have gotten in the car with the person I believe killed Jimmy Hoffa, Sal Bergoglio, but he would have gotten into the car with Frank Sheeran. Act two, they drive to a private residence where Hoffa is killed. Again, Charlie has has Frank Sheeran saying that he was the one who killed Jimmy Hoffa. I believe it was Sal Bergoglio who killed Jimmy Hoffa. Mm-hmm. Act three, Hoffa's body is stuffed into a 55-gallon drum, shipped via Gateway transportation truck to an unknown destination. And the way we know all of this is because there was an informant named Ralph Picardo who had been visited by two of the conspirators in the Hoffa case. And it was one of them, Steve Andretta, who gave Ralph Picardo the information about what had happened to Hoffa. Mm-hmm. And it has been that information, which was given to the FBI in November of 1975, which was the basis for the December 1975 grand jury about the Hoffa case, in which all of these principals, along with a guy named Roland McMaster, was brought to the grand jury in Detroit. And it was that information that was the basis of everything that we have been operating on since.
All right. Now we're going to turn from Dan Muldea to Charles Brandt, who is the author of a book called I Heard You Paint Houses, Frank the Irishman Sheeran and the Inside Story of the Mafia, the Teamsters, and the Last Ride of Jimmy Hoffa. Charles Brandt, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
First of all, tell us about the expression, I heard you paint houses, what it means, how it figures in the relationship between Hoffa and Sheeran.
To paint a house is to kill a man. The paint is the blood that spatters on the walls and the floor when you execute somebody. And those were the first words that Jimmy Hoffa ever spoke to Frank Sheeran. It was a job interview on the phone from Detroit to Philadelphia. Hoffa had just taken over the Teamsters, wanted to consolidate his power. In particular, he wanted to get rid of some rebels that he had a couple of reasons to want to get rid of. One was that they represented a threat to his power, but from his point of view, more importantly, they weakened his position and the position of the Teamsters in terms of labor negotiations and that sort of thing. contrary to what Dan just said, although Dan said a lot of great things and did a lot of great reporting, I acknowledge that in my book. Hoffa was, from all I've been able to gather, a committed labor leader. He chose a deal with the devil to achieve his ends, but he really did have in mind creating a master freight agreement that did an awful lot for the labor, for the Teamsters and for the labor movement.
Mm-hmm.
And he was trying to get rid of, cold-bloodedly murder, rebels that would weaken his position. And he was looking for muscle. Frank Sheeran was recommended to him by the powerful mafia boss Russell Bufalino. And it was a job interview. Mm-hmm. I heard you paint houses, and Sheeran said, I do my own carpentry work too, which means that he gets rid of the bodies.
Now, as mentioned a few moments ago, Frank Sheeran has confessed to the murder of Jimmy Hoffa, and you've reported on that, too. Dan Muldea doesn't think that he did it.
Well, just to be clear, Frank Sheeran has confessed to many things.
Sorry,
go ahead.
Okay, no, thanks for clearing that up, Dan. But Charles Brandt, Dan Muldea thinks somebody else did the killing with Jimmy Hoffa.
Well, let me first address what Sheeran confessed to. He confessed to killing Crazy Joey Gallo. And that's what most people, when they say he confessed to many things, wonder about. Because the story that's been put out there by the public, for the public, I should say, since Gallo was whacked in 1972 in Umberto's Clam House in Little Italy in New York City, the story was that three Italian men burst into Umberto's and began firing. They were two brothers, and there was a fellow named Sonny Pinto. And that story circulated. It formed the basis of two movies that involved Crazy Joey Gallo. One actually is a biography of Joey Gallo, a movie, and then a number of books. They all repeat this. Well, Sheeran, at a retirement party, a Teamsters retirement party, told me that he killed Crazy Joey Gallo. And I challenged him on it. I said, now that's already been proven, that it was Sonny Pinto and these two Italian brothers. And he swore that he did. He told me how he did it. And I put it in the book.
It's in the book.
In the book. And and then out of nowhere came this New York Times editor who saw his picture in the book and who said, oh, my God, I was an eyewitness to the killing of Gallo. I was a young journalism major. She went to Columbia School of Journalism. And I was sitting there when this man who's in this picture walked in and killed Crazy Joey Gallo. Oh,
so
had
she's
a perfect view of him.
A perfect view of him. Wow. Well, Charles Brandt and Dan Muldea.
She was interviewed. She agreed to be interviewed for this this show. I'm looking forward to seeing
this,
that interview.
This sounds like it's going to be amazing. The stories are going to be unbelievable. Michael Green, this has been 40 years almost since Jimmy Hoffa disappeared. Why do we still care about this murder?
We haven't found him. And I have a confession to make. No, I don't. But seriously, I mean, people to this day are looking. And I suspect that we're not going to find a body.
Well, we will be discussing that aspect and many, many others. Professor Michael Green, reporter and author Dan Muldea, author Charles Brandt, part of History Detectives. You'll see them in an episode of History Detectives discussing the disappearance of Jimmy Hoffa. And that's coming up tomorrow evening. Mr. Muldea, Mr. Brandt.
I'm sorry, is it tomorrow evening or is it a week from? It's on the 22nd.
You know what? Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that. It's a week from tomorrow evening. We thank you all very much. Dan Muldea, Charles Brandt, Michael Green,
gentlemen,
thanks for being here.
Gentlemen, pleasure talking to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.